Vishnupadaya Krishnapushtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tihame Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Niravasesha Sanyavadi Astachare Chitari. Reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 17, text number 23. Text number 23. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Please repeat. Mekala Ajina Danda Aksha Brahmasutra Kamandalum Jatilaha Advauta Adhauta Datpashaha Araktapitaha Kusa Kushan Tadat Mekalajina Dandaksha Brahma Sutra Kamandalum Jatilo Dauta Dadvaso Rakta Pita Kushandadat
Rakta Pita Kushandadat
Mekala Belt Ajina Deerskin Danda Staff Aksha Bead Necklace Brahmasutra Brahman Thread Kamandalun and Water Pot Jatila with Matted Unruly Hair Adhauta, without polishing, bleaching or ironing. Dattvasha Vasahu, the teeth and clothes. Arakta Pitaha, without accepting, a luxurious or sensuous seat. Kushan, kusha grass. Dadat, carrying in his hand. Translation and purport. There's 11 cantos. So the purports have been compiled by Vidyananda Goswami and maybe others have assisted, and the translation also. So this is the translation. I don't know if it's on the board. It's written so you can don't need to repeat it. I'll just read it through. The brahmachari should regularly dress with a belt of straw and deerskin garments. Any brahmacharis here? No brahmacharis? Okay. Bring out the deerskin and the straw belt. Okay. He should wear matted hair. A Rastafarian. Carry a rod and a water pot and decorated with aksha beads. Where's your aksha beads? Or Shiva's beads? What type of brahmachari is this? Bogus brahmachari. Where are the other brahmacharis? They're hiding. They read the purport. They thought they'll hide this morning. And he should also, of course, this is after Brahman initiation. You've taken Brahman initiation? And a sacred thread. You got one of those? That's something, right? Take everything else off. Really bad, carrying pure kusha grass in his hand, he should never accept a luxurious or sensuous sitting place. Two mats. Look at this. Everyone else has got one and the brahmachari has two. What hypocrisy have we got into this here? He should not unnecessarily polish his teeth. Open your mouth. Nor should he bleach and iron his clothes. This class is for you. All right, we'll take it off you now, don't worry. Forget all of that. Well, we don't forget it entirely. It's a principle. But it doesn't just apply to those who happen to be fortunate. Of course, you're fortunate to be a grihastha also, fortunate to be in a lady's body. Whatever we're in, we can see it as a fortunate gift of the Lord to be engaged in His service. For those who are fortunate to be in the Brahmachari Ashram, the principle is to be applied, not the exact details. And then the details are given by the spiritual master. That's why Sarva. Your name, Sarva? Bhaktisar. Why Bhaktisar is dressed the way he is, why he has shining white teeth, and doesn't wear deer skin, and so on and so forth, because he's following the spiritual master's instruction. That's the first, the most important principle of Brahmacharya, like all ashrams. So in the purport it says, the word Adhauta Dadvash indicates that a renounced Brahmachari is not concerned with a glistening smile to attract the opposite sex. Mm-hmm. Nor does he pay much attention to his outer garments. So these are basic principles for preaching, of course, and various other reasons. We may dress tidily. Sometimes the Brahmacharis may also iron their cloth for preaching. Sometimes. They're not supposed to have ladies do it, however. They're supposed to do it themselves, and they're not supposed to behave in such a way or dress in such a way as to attract the opposite sex. Brahmachari life is meant for austerity and obedience to the spiritual master, so that later in life, when one becomes a businessman, a politician or intellectual brahmana, one will be able to call upon resources of character, discipline, self-control, austerity and humility. So all this is, these are the most important things, whatever it requires, to learn some of the most important qualities as a brahmachari, as a young child, so that throughout one's life one carries these good qualities with one. Not that one wears a deer skin or a belt made of straw or whatever it is for the rest of one's life. Maybe, but not necessarily. The main thing to imbibe are the qualities which are meant to be taught in a brahmachari life. Self-control is one of the primary ones one learns, but also these others here mentioned, resources of character. Krishna consciousness is really founded on character, established by the behavior. Lord Chaitanya says the principles of religion are established by the behavior of a devotee, not by the philosophy. The flower we were discussing this morning, we were stood in the street outside the temple, wondering whether to come in or not, or whatever we were doing out there, trying to work out who we were. And we were talking, and then one lady means a local lady presumably, walking on the path. And as usual, the devotees are standing there blocking the whole footpath. And the lady would have had to have walked onto the grass in order to have passed by us. So we mentioned, please stand out of the way to let the lady pass by. And the devotees moved, and the lady immediately smiled and said something, I can't remember what it was, good morning, thank you very much, or something like that, and walked through. So these are the sort of simple little things that brahmacharis are supposed to learn. How to respect other living entities and not just think, I'm a brahmachari, get out of my way. Or I'm a devotee, get out of my way. I've got important appointments, and I'm going to break all the rules. and overtake you and cut you up and this and that, and bounce the lights, whatever it may be. Devotee Prabhupada says the first quality is he's a perfect gentleman. And if we're not cultivating this, then we're actually an embarrassment to the Krishna consciousness movement. And we're doing a good disservice to spread the movement. If we don't respect people in general, if we don't treat them as we would like ourselves being treated, if we don't treat men, other women as our mother, and so on, then we're doing a good disservice to the movement. So we're not preaching at all. And philosophy is a hopeless waste of time. In fact, it will result in pride and disturbance and only attracting persons of weird character. So character is the most important thing, quality, practically speaking, of relationships, of dealing with everything, be it deities, be it devotees, be it public, be it objects around us, be it our own body, be it whatever we're given, how to utilize it, how to try to learn how to utilize it properly, culture this mood of seeing everything how Krishna would like it be. So these little things the devotees should try to remember and imbibe, how others think when we speak or do what we do, and how it affects others. We may not be able to think so much at this point in time how it affects Krishna or how he sees it, because we have a devotee association to help us to learn that. But that often we deny, and when some devotee tries to give us some sincere advice, sometimes we reject it or even fight against it sometimes. Instead of understanding this is Krishna speaking to us, we think it's somebody with a big false ego trying to control us or something. But it's actually our big false ego that Krishna is trying to adjust so that we can become a little bit human and not just remain in a similar mentality of an animal or creature of this lower nature. Human beings of this modern age mostly are like that, but not all. So it's a fact, it's a very good preaching when devotees behave properly amongst the devotees. If you're a brahmachari or a grihastha or sannyasi, whatever we're so called are, man or woman, if we play our part as best we can, you know, obviously we're conditioned and it's not possible to expect perfection there, but as best we can we try to follow the standards of that particular ashram or particular gender, etc., that pleases Krishna, and it will create a nice culture, culture to help us to get off the bodily platform of life, to become free of the false ego. You know, we always want to fulfill, the mind comes up with all kinds of amazing ideas, mostly based on, of course, all based on the false ego generally, and the intelligence is very, very busy trying to fulfill it, trying to satisfy all the mind's demands like this. Their consciousness is me-centered instead of Krishna-centered, or selfish instead of selfless, generally speaking, in this world. We see ourselves, what we call ourselves, in the center as the false ego. So the whole idea is to become, not to establish our egotistical desires or our temporary desires, but to become free of them. And the process of becoming free of them is to, one of the parts of the practical part, is to, as much as possible, play the part designated to us by the Lord, the Prabhupada writes in Isha Upanishad, and not that of others, don't imitate. Understand our part, that is the part which is suitable for us to become free of the false ego, no matter what it is, whether we're man or woman, brahmachari or old or young, whatever it is, it doesn't really matter. The point is that that's the situation or the tools that we have at this moment, which are the right tools to help free us from the false ego, and it's up to us what we do with them. If we want to try to imitate someone else, that's our problem. But if we really want to go back to Godhead, then we have to utilize the tools which Krishna has given us, no matter what they are. We all have different minds and bodies, but there's nothing wrong with that necessarily. It's how we use it. And if we deny it for what it is, then we're denying Krishna's gift to us. We try to do what someone else is doing, that's called sinful activity, or lust. It's called lust, actually. Krishna calls it kama esha krodha esha rajaguna samudbhavaha. When he says that there's lust, Arjuna, which causes a man to act sinfully. He's referring to a person who's in one condition, who gives up that condition to try to imitate somebody else. That's called sin, which is born of lust, of seeing that someone else has something which I don't have and I want it. Whatever it may be, position, respect, material abilities, material opulence, whatever it is, so many things. We're seeing imitation. That isn't the business of the soul. The soul has to get free of all of that. If they've got it, they're using Krishna service, jolly good. But whatever we've got, all we have to do is use it properly in Krishna service and not imitate anyone else. Simple as that. And by behaving gentlemanly or gentlewomanly according to our position, this will help to create a society which is very attractive, and the philosophy will be easy to imbibe, easy to apply, attractive, very attractive for people and for devotees. So Brahmacharya life is specifically here, but the same principle in all ashrams of life. Humility, austerity, self-control, discipline. Student life as described here is far different from the mindless hedonism known as modern education. And so, well, this is a big topic in of itself, the educational structure and system which we're faced with in this modern age, and the difficulties of introducing a more beneficial form of education for young boys and girls in society is a big challenge. Perhaps we'll be more successful, we hope, in due course of time. Up to now there's been some success, of course, but there's been a lot of mistakes and a lot to learn in the form of this subject matter, because we're living in a world where this society is very differently focused and differently structured. So we have to bear that in mind as well. But nonetheless, we should work towards this. The modern, Sri Prabhupada would describe modern education as a human slaughterhouse. What can we say? Take it in different ways. But it is really beneficial for the soul, the way things are structured, even in the sense of what we were just discussing, really. Generally speaking, modern society is not designed to help people to play their parts. The young boys and girls are more or less spurred on to try to attain some kind of high level of success, which may be quite contrary to their natures. To become an engineer or IT specialist or a doctor or whatever people are spurred on to become these days, and the parents push them on, sometimes against their nature. We see all over the world countless examples of this. People, I would say, wrongly situated. Surveys are made, for instance, of whether people like their occupation, and apparently, at least in the West, most people don't. I heard 90% sometimes do not like their occupation, which is wrong, completely wrong. There ought to be something, but it shouldn't be like that. And study, education is really not necessarily what you want to do, it's what you need to do to get something, another, whatever it is, a job with money and things like that. But a lot of times it's not, and if you don't pass, if it's not easy for you to study that subject, it means it's the wrong subject, full stop, simple as that. You shouldn't have to struggle to be successful in the subject. It should be natural. It's just reawakening what is already there, that's all. Vedic society, Vedic education is just reawakening what is already in you, just allowing it to blossom. The seeds are all there. You don't have to try to push new seeds in from outside on a soil which really they're not meant to be growing in. Seeds are already there. You have just said nothing wrong with what we are. We just have to know how to cultivate what we are, how to allow our nature, our qualities, etc., born of us, to blossom in the right way and not to become negative. But when we suppress them or deny them or not even aware of them, then it does. Then it results in misfit situation, adolescence, what do you call it, dealing all kinds of problems in society. Where people become, because they're unhappy, they're not satisfied, they get irritated and do crazy things sometimes because they're wrongly situated. They don't know who they are, even materially. It's hard in this age. The Spanish Shankara is, of course, very common. But still, there is something there. And usually young kids, they do have some type of inclinations which may, like they're lucky, be developed, but oftentimes they're subdued, or even to the point of being almost threatened if you carry on staying like that. And you're almost forced by social pressure, family pressure, economic pressure, and any peer pressure, all sorts of pressures to do this and that which really you don't want to do. So you get all kinds of businessmen around the world who are hopeless businessmen, useless, so-called businessmen. But they're not really, they're just sugars working hard to try to make ends meet day and night. A businessman can do it with his eyes closed, no matter what's going on. And a real businessman is one who organizes others, not one who thinks he's the boss. One's rightly situated is easy. It's not a challenge to fight because you want to fight. Your nature is to fight. It's not the type of fighting we're doing. We're talking about Kshatriya, the honorable situation where they're educated to use their tendencies or their propensities for the highest purpose. Not like street fighters or just frustrated, ignorant persons. But educated in this way to properly utilize whatever talents we've got. This is education. To bring it out. You don't teach business to someone who has no propensity. It was not natural. It would be natural. You don't teach philosophy to a person who's not brahminically inclined or not much anyway. You don't teach how to, be a kshatriya to somebody who's not got the qualities of a kshatriya. The first thing to look at are the qualities, not the size of the body necessarily, or what you want even may not be exactly what you really want. It's to look at the qualities of a person and see where they fit in. Just like I think in the previous verses discussing maybe education is given to a boy, say for instance at the age of 12, usually Brahmin initiation is given to an educated, qualified boy at the age of 12, so then they can, or around about that age, to Brahmin, so they can go on, and others maybe a little later, Brahmins. Kshatriyas and Vaishyas also receive education. To receive that education at different stages, they take different samskaras of Brahmin, given the Brahmin initiation is one of them. But only those who are qualified. Now everyone seems thinks that it should be pushed in to be a Brahmin, but if you don't have the qualities of a Brahmin, it's not just to wave things around at the statues that we put a thread around someone's neck or to cook up what you like to eat. That's not what it means. It's a quality which filters through society and uplifts the rest of society. A Brahmin is a preacher. He's not a preacher, he's not really a Brahmin. It doesn't mean he speaks. It means that by his behavior he uplifts others. That he's aware of the spiritual identity and the identity of others. And so he treats everyone with great respect. He sees everyone who comes to the temple, for instance, as being an object of his service. How can I serve this person? It's interesting, I remember when Prabhupada was in London one time, it was about 4:15 in the afternoon, and I was in the temple in the manor. There was only one other person in the temple room, one congregational lady who were chanting japa. Well, there were two others. Pujari was also there, but they were behind the curtains washing the dishes after the aarti and the food offering. So Prabhupada came into the room all of a sudden out of the blue, and very unusual for him to do that at that time of the day. Even his servant wasn't with him. He had one brahmachari with him who, so I presume, was just happened to be outside the room, and Prabhupada called him to come with him, and he was carrying Prabhupada's shoes into the temple. That was another issue. Prabhupada gave him a source for that. But the main point was that Prabhupada came in. When he came in, for instance, this lady who was chanting japa, she was a congregation devotee, she bowed down to Prabhupada, and I also, of course, we bowed down when Prabhupada came in. But she bowed down with her feet towards the deities. She didn't know, because Prabhupada came in the back of the temple room. So she paid down with her head towards Prabhupada, but her feet towards the deity. So Prabhupada then came forward. He obviously noticed that, and he came up to the altar and he said, "Where is the pujari? Bring the pujari." So the pujari was behind the curtain, so the pujari came out. They're actually a GBC member now. And they came out from behind the curtain. And Prabhupada said, "You are the pujari?" And he said, "Yes." Prabhupada said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm washing the dishes, Prabhupada." Prabhupada said, "No, no, what are you doing?" They didn't know what to say, obviously. I mean, what can they say? Something Prabhupada didn't know what Prabhupada was indicating. Prabhupada said, "You are the pujari, and you're not teaching the guests how to pay their obeisances properly in the temple room. What type of pujari are you?" He chastised him right there in the temple room, and the oldest devotees in the movement. Now, Prabhupada expected that the pujaris would be preachers. It doesn't mean they speak philosophy, it means they teach people how to play their part. And if you're in the temple, the part is you learn how to offer your respects to the deities, how to behave in front of the deity, how to do this in a loving way, not "don't do this, don't do that." No, not at all. Then Prabhupada bowed down, and he said, in the temple room, and he bowed down with his left side to the deity. He said, and there was one little boy named Shiladwar who came up to Prabhupada, bowed down next to Prabhupada, and just did exactly what Prabhupada did. He just imitated him, of course. Prabhupada said, "What is your problem? Even a child can do it. Why can't you do it?" By this time, there were a lot of devotees in the temple, of course, because when they heard that Prabhupada was downstairs, the devotees started running to the temple. But they missed the first part. So then Prabhupada made that example. Then he said, "You either pay your obeisance to your left side to the deities or your right side to the deities, but never with your feet or your head. If the Vyasa sounds special to the deities, you don't put your head to the right side or left side, like that. And not with your feet towards the deities, ever. Never, ever, ever. Now, if a guest comes, you only request, you're not going to force. But you very lovingly and very kindly. If you don't know how to do it, then don't make a mess. But just bear it in mind that as much as possible, we're trying to help everyone to advance in spiritual life, and the pujari has a big job to do. Make sure there's prasadam for the guests. No one should go away without prasadam or some kind of deity prasad of some kind. Everyone should be given the opportunity. This is how a Brahmin should be. Education to teach people how to do this, how to do that, how to serve nicely. Everything should be taught. It's not just philosophy, it's the least of it. That's the least important of education. That's only according to a person's use. If you can't use it, don't give it. Simple as that. Philosophy is only given to those who know what to do with it. If you don't know what to do with it, what's the point of giving it? They'll misuse it. They'll become proud. They'll say the wrong thing to the wrong person, etc., etc. Of course, in the modern age, Krishna-conscious brahmacharis cannot artificially adopt the ancient dress and ritualistic duties described here, but the essential values of self-control, purity, and obedience to a bona fide spiritual master are just as necessary today as they were in Vedic times. So yes, the qualities are there. They must be imbibed by whatever method, not just brahmachari, everyone. We all should develop qualities according to our position which are favorable, beneficial for our spiritual advancement and for spreading Krishna consciousness. This type of education, even in our own society, is probably lesser now. We're very keen on the Bhakti Shastri and the Bhakti Vaibhava, etc., which is nothing wrong with that, it's good. But I would say that, you know, without the foundation of culture, they're not going to really necessary. First, we won't know what to do with it all. It will remain simply theoretical. And secondly, it won't necessarily do a lot to preach Krishna consciousness or help us in our spiritual lives that much. But more the actual culture of our behavior and relationships and so on, which is absolutely essential. And how we behave here in the temple, how we keep the temples clean, here are very good, of course. These are very wonderful things are here. I'm sure these things are going on. But this is just the subject playing our parts accordingly. If you're becoming fanatic, you're in the wrong position. One is rightly situated is not a fanatic. He's naturally relating with others in a way which is inspiring, which is and not disturbing. Otherwise, men would be wrongly situated. These things are there, because agitated brahmachari life is not really of much benefit. One should take advice what to do and see why and take the necessary steps therein. And all these things, details we need. As we grow up, we hope that we'll become more and more conscious and capable of perceiving and helping each other to be more rightly situated, instead of trying to swim against the tide or against the current all the time, treading water, so to speak, but rather being on the right track. Even if you're not moving as fast as someone else, at least you're moving in the right direction, rather than trying to move their speed and then collapsing, finding out our position. Of course, there are general things. Everyone can chant Hare Krishna, no matter who we are. Everyone can, you know, some amount of Krishna consciousness is obviously there for everyone, and everyone has a part to play. Just finding our part and not being envious or jealous of others, not being proud of our part, and so on. This type of education is required. It's just important for someone to be cleaning out the garbage as it is someone doing the altar daily worship. It's not that one's more important than the other. There's no real question of that. They're both important. Everything's important, but we just have to find out where we fit into the port. Which one we fit into. Alright, we'll finish there. Are there any questions or comments?
I want to remember, as you said, we do crazy things because we think we are body. In that bodily conception, we are doing crazy things because of night pressure, peer pressure, environment. So if we realize, because modern civilization is teaching us how we meet, drink, and all that because of bodily concept. So we have to get all those three modes and do Kirtaniya Sadhari, Padma Prabhu speaking.
Yeah.
To love a certain body. That is our aim. So how do we love a certain body other than connecting the body?
How do we come to
love a certain body?
Change. How to make the change? Well, a society is supposed to provide a atmosphere or an environment to help with that. Of course, we need association and proper engagement. Surely everyone's on the bodily platform of life, we wouldn't be here otherwise. It's like a hospital. How do you bring everyone to the healthy condition in a hospital by the proper treatment? The doctors have to give, they may make mistakes, no doubt, but they try to give the proper treatment to the patient, as you know yourself. Everyone's a little different. Everyone's in a different disease condition of life. So one has to try to give the proper treatment to the patient and the proper diet and the proper environment, etc., depending on the condition of the patient. So that's, I mean, you know, we're proper did want us to have some kind of understanding of Varna Ashram, for instance, which, although may not be practical to expect to apply according to these principles, this is all part of Varna Ashram. The description of the Varnashram system, which is one of the, for conditioned souls, particularly an important part of becoming unconditioned. You've got your condition, now you can't go against that condition. You may know that condition is binding and maybe not so pious, etc., but then you learn how to regulate it. Say, for instance, you're sinfully inclined, how to regulate that so gradually one becomes free of it. And society will provide such facilities. Not pumping it down you more and more and more, but helping you to not just put you in a lockup and making you feel like you're a demon and a criminal, but helping people to actually advance from where they are, taking a position which they're capable of doing, so their senses and are engaged and they're not feeling, you know, belittled or, you know, pathetic. You know, you go to a school, You're not very bright, and all the time you hear, you stupid dunce. You're useless. Did you pass your test? No. Bang, bang, bang. You should go home. And then you feel, I hate my parents. I hate the society. I'm going to smash the society. You go out and break bottles and kick people. And if it does that, doesn't work. You get locked up, and then you get so frustrated, you get start taking heroin and become a drug addict, and then you kill somebody and you get hung. And the whole thing goes on like this. Those people are being mistreated right from the moment of birth. So, you know, there's a little bit, there's just lack of intelligence. It's a demoniac age, Kali Yuga. We have to try to do something, at least to try to be, you know, bear that in mind. It's all theoretical, it sounds, but in principle it's practical also. It usually happens at some point of our lives that we discover a little bit about more where we're situated rather than where we thought we were, or we thought everyone else told us we should be. You know, it's like in the Brahmacharya Ashram, sometimes people they just don't belong there. Nothing wrong with that whatsoever. Nothing wrong with it. But then where do they belong? We have to, it's the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It's not the International Society for Temple Consciousness. You know, the temple is not insignificant, it's very significant. There's a tiny speck of our movement. Tiny speck. We've hardly gone beyond the temple. And we're supposed to be in every nook and corner there should be Krishna consciousness. And all the businesses, and the offices, and the farms, everywhere. There should be systems to help people become Krishna conscious. And those who have a little Vaishya tendency of probably the biggest opportunity to preach in the world, to establish businesses or organizations so that people can work in a Krishna conscious environment according to their capacity and do the things they want to do, so to speak, materially what they're inclined. And this will make them a lot less disturbed. And they won't want to smoke and drink. They're just frustrated. That's why people smoke and drink. And, you know, if things are done like this and they're not meant to think they have to do it, not really up to that yet, but they can still be Krishna conscious. They can still become Krishna conscious. And eventually we have to think a little bit beyond the realms of just trying to manage and control everyone from the temple. It will not work. It just doesn't work.
What you're saying is that they see a season of the devotees, we really go on a most special Bhagavan.
Ultimately, that's the thread. But how to, weave the thread with so many different colors? You know, not everyone's the same. You know, different people will have, you know, different application at different times, different dosages, so to speak. And it's the Brahmin's responsibility to share that with everyone else. It's the Kshatriya's responsibility to take it on board and to organize society so that everyone in society is given their opportunity to perform their duties and at the same time appropriately to hear a certain amount of Krishna consciousness. They can't sit down and just hear Krishna Katha all day long. The festivals will be there, and of course as they're working they may have, in our modern day situation, they may be taking prasadam and they'll be hearing the holy name on piped radio or whatever you call it these days. And so on and so forth, and they'll get the devoted association. It's not that you're, when we look down on these guys, you're just demons and this and that. They're achievers who are gradually evolving to the platform of devotional service, and we have to give them a chance like that in many different ways. Yes, it's a big topic. Etiquette amongst a multicultural, multi-natured society. We're all a little bit bottled up and so on and so forth. It is an evolving challenge, really. And when devotees become more mature, we would hope to see that that will become more of a kind of a natural sort of a thing. I would suggest you have, I can only make a suggestion here, really, that we have some forums where there can be open. Istogosti was supposed to be for that. I don't know if Istogosti still take place, but Istogosti is actually nothing to do with temple management at all. That's not what Istogostis are. Istogosti are when devotees come together and discuss these type of things in a practical forum without imposing a particular policy upon everybody, but where devotees actually discuss it in reality. Of course, there has to be maturity there. But open forums to discuss the details, and practical details of relationships and etiquettes and philosophical application. Philosophy is for application, it's not just for learning. It's for how we apply it in our lives. But not every instruction is for every. Bhagavatam has 18,000 verses. It's the same in the Gita. Etiquette is a culture. So in the Bhagavad Gita there are different chapters, and sometimes we start at the end, not realizing we haven't even started yet. Prabhu, sabadhanam prajyatnam ekam sharanam prajyatnam. That's what Bhagavad Gita says, surrender. Full stop. But that's the last verse. The other, whatever it is, 700 verses are to try to bring us to that point. Understanding where we are, and taking it from there a little bit. It's a two-way thing, more than two-way thing, three-way Krishna. And whoever we're talking about, who we're working with, and ourselves, conditioned life has made it a little difficult to be a little humble and a little bit satisfied with what we are and where we are and so on. And that's we're not trying to materially change, we're trying to make the conscious change within. That we're seeing our situation in relation to Krishna. And various types of etiquettes are there to try to preserve that principle and help. So I don't know, I'm not in that type of position, it's just to evoke some thought pattern. That there should be some kind of forms of etiquette form. Etiquette. We had an etiquette seminar just now in New Zealand. I don't know. It's a very important aspect of our society, of this sadhu sangha, associating with each other, being in the right form to reveal one's mind. It's one of the loving exchanges. I mean, you can't necessarily do all of this in public, but there must be forums where we can sincerely reveal our minds without any judgmentalism, without any fear, without any, somebody trying to impose their opinion of what you should be thinking on us. But a situation where we can genuinely and honestly with a sincere intent, reveal our minds with the hope of that we'll become a better person, a better devotee, and so on. That should be there. We all have our difficulties, we all make our mistakes. For sure, none of us are perfect in our etiquette or our relationships or our behavior. But as much as possible, these things are very useful. If we can, charity begins at home, so to speak. If we can try ourselves to play a better part in the situation. Tolerate, we have to tolerate, no doubt, there's always going to be some. Things don't go the way we would wish, and so on. As much as possible, we have to try to play a good part. We can pray, perhaps chant as sincerely as we can. It will be the Lord pleasing. We're asking to be engaged in His service. That includes playing the part we're meant to do in relationship to His service. And we try our best to become purified. If we become purified in heart, then the negative things which cause irritation and anger and so on will become less of an influence, and then we can feel a bit more compassion, a bit more concern for these things, create a broader based society. Brahmin means broad minded. Doesn't mean somebody just rams things down people's throats. We're broad minded, very broad minded. But at the same time, not compromised. In other words, we need to know what is appropriate according to time, place, and circumstance for a particular situation. The day will come when we'll have many other outlets for experiencing and practicing Krishna consciousness, and not just the temple form. And then appropriately various kinds of education will be automatically provided therein. And people in general can't sit down and listen to a Bhagavatam class, but they can find a place where they can connect with Krishna in a different environment, different situation. If they just think this is the only environment, then it's limiting. And when they come, sometimes they get into trouble because they're not really suited for that kind of a circumstance. So we have to learn from scripture. These things are being explained here. We're very good at repeating it, but not applying it. What they say, practice, what's the word? More important than precept, what is that? Example is more important than precept, is there something like that? They say? An example. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, yad-yada charity shreshtas. Whatever a common man does, not what he, whatever a great man does, not what he says. Whatever a great man does, common men follow in their footsteps. That doesn't mean they imitate them. It means that when you're rightly situated, you're going to be happy. And you're going to naturally be interacting better with others. And then automatically others will be attracted to that experience. And according to where they're at, though, it'll be easier for them to be comfortable where they're at and be happy where they're at. When we're rightly situated, it's a lot easier to relate to others. Yeah, it's a really big topic and something that should be taken up as a major community discussion. That's what istigosthas are for, various kinds of istigosthas. We used to have them. When we joined every week, we had an istigosthi. Of course, we weren't at this point in those days. Mostly they were just philosophical discussions. The only istigosis I've been to in the last 25 years are, okay, we've just had a meeting, we've decided from now on, you can't put your shoes over there, you've got to put your shoes over there, and so-and-so is going to be doing this, so do what he says, and we're not going to do this anymore, we're going to have this. Who volunteers to do that? And who's doing, that's not an istigosis, it's a management, practical management meeting, which may also be required, but that's not an istigosis. Different thing altogether. To be humble and tolerant and so on is all very well, but not so easy sometimes. We need help. A little bit of. Again, I'm just talking. But we need some practical. There are many mature devotees now who are maturing in these areas, can help us to also mature. And to create an atmosphere which is very attractive, as Prabhupada wanted. The temple should be very so nice, the atmosphere that people are automatically impressed and attracted. Devotees care for each other, they care for the people who are coming. And not that we run away when somebody comes. It's not my job, I'm going to hide. Maybe we are busy, that's right. But in principle, we shouldn't be like that. Anything else? Yes, Mati, the other hand. Everyone's different. We may not be, mature enough for that. I mean, nowadays, some people are. No doubt, they can mature, they can perceive by one's behavior and response and so on. Even other symptoms may be there. In previous society, it was a lot easier, of course, to detect that. I know you wouldn't have to worry about that. It would more or less be in society from the beginning. Like the tendencies of a child and so on and so forth are a little bit more transparent than when we get older. And at that stage it's usually detected. At our stage we have to be a little bit more, let's say, covered over not necessarily say so easy to immediately see. Some just gentle words. What they say, first of all, address, and then address or something. First of all, try to make some conversation, find out a little bit, make them feel at home. Unless there's some obvious immediate reaction, which is you may have to call someone else to deal with it. But if a person is like normal, so to speak, then you just make them feel very at home. You don't try to preach holier than thou philosophy. You don't, you know, try to ram things down their throats or something. We're talking about people coming as guests, but just make them feel very, very comfortable and attract them and give them time. And gradually it will come out in the due course of one's interaction. They'll feel comfortable. They'll clamp up as soon as you start trying to preach philosophy initially. If they want to talk about philosophy, that's fine. That's where they're at. That will come out. But just making them feel very warm. I give an example one time at New Govardhan Farm many, many, many years ago. There was this group of Christian group came to visit the temple. And so one devotee is taking them around and he's trying to preach to them. You know, we've got it together, we're this, that, the other, and we're doing this, we're doing that. And I knew quite well we're not doing this and doing that. But he was trying to convince them like we've got it together, you know. So I could see that they were losing interest very quickly. People don't come to the temple necessarily to hear that we've got it together this way and that way. And after a few minutes they were kind of like, one or two of them started arguing, the others were drifting off. So I kind of like drifted into the conversation and one by one started picking things up a little bit and started to relate, saying that, you know, we've got, actually, to be honest, you know, we're struggling with this and we're struggling with that. And you know, what do you have, what suggestions? You started making a conversation they could relate with, and after a while they were all back on board again and going on a tour and discussing. And sometimes we're living in a dream bubble of some sort or another, which we're not in ourselves. We'd like to be, but we're not in it, and we don't really know what it's like to be in it. It's not living in a dream bubble. You become like, you know, I'd say completely in another world to everybody else. Yes. So how to relate to everyone around us in a way that they can feel an attraction to Krishna consciousness. Just being nice, just being friendly, just being considerate of their situation, sensitive to their situation, is quite a big, big thing. Quite a big thing. This, again, it's one of those subjects which, well, we can have education in, we can have some things we have to learn by experience, maturity. Devotees who are suited for certain areas would be naturally expected to deal with those sort of things more so. But all of us, as Vaishnavas or aspiring Vaishnavas, we can look at the 26 qualities of a devotee and see, wait a minute, I'm not developing these qualities. What am I going to do to try to develop these qualities? They're supposed to be the qualities of a devotee. They're not the qualities of a brahmachari or a sannyasi. They're the qualities of a man or a woman. They're the qualities of a devotee. Nothing to do with gender or occupation or age. They're the qualities of a devotee. And we should see if we're developing those qualities or not. Prabhupada asked that question. He said that. What are the qualities of a devotee? These are the qualities you should be developing. Can't force them on anyone, but there should be some. It's the changes that should be taking place. We should be developing some of these qualities. They're natural for the soul. So if we're actually practicing Krishna consciousness, they go on side by side. We have practices which help to develop them, and at the same time, the chanting and hearing should be purifying our hearts to evoke those natural qualities more. And if we're not, that's not something we get angry about or disturb somebody. We just look and see, well, maybe there's something we need to do to help develop it. We don't just write everybody off. We have to see what will be. We learn ourselves that that has to be applied. Having gone through all of these various issues, we kind of have a little realization of one's own situation, not others. and what is right thing to do and the wrong, not the right thing to do, and what is the right thing to do. And it seems to me that when one's more at home with oneself, it's a lot easier to be at home with others, no matter who they are. It seems to be. So getting a little home with ourselves, dealing with ourselves nicely, respecting your own God-given qualities and so on, is a part of it. One more question and I have to go. Yes, ma'am. They have a what? Slower?
Okay. In the private sector.
Private sector.
People doing multicultural or even the government sector.
Government, okay.
Multicultural context. Within the human resources department, they would have a division that focuses simply on the management of diversity amongst people.
They would have a what?
They have a division that focuses specifically on the management of diversity amongst staff.
Amongst staff.
Yes. And then adjust the entire organization to accommodate that so that people can work comfortably and best with each other and deliver a good product.
Is it,
now,
is
I think that can get done with an objective such as, you know, spreading the charting across in every town in your village. Organization means there's something missing.
Yeah, there is.
We need to have a focus on
that. Oh, yeah. It's founded on the Varnashram system. It's the same, although it may not be the same in all the details, but the principle is the same. The people are in different stages. We're not talking spiritually exactly, but we all have different natures, conditions, capabilities, needs, and so on and so forth. And that's why the Varnashram system comes in to facilitate that. Even as a general principle, for instance, the whole point is for everyone to become Krishna conscious. There are general things of chanting Hare Krishna and focusing on Krishna and so on, but the details vary. So division in society, although we may want everyone to be one, ultimately that's only a spiritual concept. Materially speaking, it just does not exactly apply. And different people do have different needs of association, different needs of encouragement, just like children of different natures, they need. I'll give an example there in my life anyway, maybe you've not had. When I was a child, the general education was divided between grammar school and secondary school. Now I don't think they have that in general, there are private grammar schools and so on. But the idea of that was not to, you know, to kind of like put people up or down, it's just to give a better environment for people who are more intellectually or more inclined towards that type of education than others. Everyone got an education, but in the secondary school it was a little bit more practical. It wasn't expected that they would study Latin and, you know, additional mathematics and all this stuff. They would study according to their capacity more. It was more inclined like that. And at the same time, they were with persons who were more of a similar kind of a nature. Obviously not completely perfect by any means, but just because there's only one division there. But it was there, and that was the idea. And those in the grammar school would be generally quite well behaved and quite serious about their studies. And if a child in the grammar school was seen not to really fit that, then it would be put back into the secondary. And if the secondary one was seen to be more intellectual, they would go up to the grammar. That was the every year system. And whatever it was. But then, about after my third year in the grammar school, I think, then they merged the two schools. And everything went to, well, to coin a phrase, everything went to pot, literally. You know, no longer was a lunch break, you know, some well-behaved little boys playing soccer. It was like, you know, chaos, madness. You know, people like grabbing hold of the girls and pushing you around and all sorts of things going on. The whole thing became a whole different environment. Certainly, I mean, it didn't really affect me too much. I was already kind of like gone enough along the line, but it created an atmosphere which was, I would say, not so favorable as the previous one. So yes, some sort of absurd situation to give that support to people of different natures. Vedic society and Brahmins living in one sector of the town, and Kshatriyas another sector, and Vaishyas a different sector, and Shudras a different sector, and the Anjijas a different sector. They all have their parts to play, but they just like to, you know, Brahmins like to get up early in the morning and chant Hare Krishna, or whatever they do need these days. Whereas someone of a Shuddha mentality doesn't like to do that. And if they make them want to do that, they get angry. And if a Brahmin has to live in a situation where everyone is doing that, he doesn't feel very inspired. Or, you know, it's the modes of nature. The dirt, Brahmin can't tolerate dirt, whereas other people, maybe they should also not, but, you know, maybe not quite as much intolerance as a Brahmin, so to speak. So things were organized so that people were a little bit more situated according to their condition. So as you say, multicultural, multinational situations, persons have different backgrounds, different languages, different approaches to different things. How to deal with it, one, because you can't just separate like in a baby society exactly, but how to deal with it, and two, how to associate with persons of a similar nature. It's called svajati, of a similar nature. How to associate and how to, you know, get good association within that. So definitely within our society, such, whether it's late genders, whether it's ages, whether it's different natures, whatever it may be, much could be done in that area. Much could be done there. And that's all part of the growth of our movement. Again, which we probably have, like in many areas, a long way to go. But we have to start sometime. Somewhere. Just talking about it may open up a few doors or not. Maybe it will close some, I don't know. Hopefully it will have some type of effect on somebody. You certainly got a strong part to play in it if you wish. There's no doubt about that. Something that's needed. Different forums where the devotees can associate and see how we can progress from where we are and how we can fit in with a greater society and how we can deal with our, and we're seeing sometimes incompatible situations. Better late than never. Alright, I better finish there. Guntara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaura Premanandi, Hare Krishna.